Hi, this is session 8 of CCT 692. The official theme is preparation for public presentations on work in progress. It's related to phase G, which we'll be running through the next few sessions. Phase G is called clarification through communication. The goal is, I have clarified the overall progression or argument underlying my research and the written reports I am starting to prepare. So this is not about writing your reports per se. It's about clarifying just what you can say to the world, what you can say to your audience about what you've learned, how it fits together, how you move the audience from your initial thoughts through your progression of steps so that maybe they won't agree with you, but they're carried with you. They understand why you're talking about this bit of evidence or this reading or this idea all the way through until you get to the final position that you want to lead them to. The position, again, we call it an argument, but it may not be an argument like you're going to win or lose, but just so that you want them to understand the position or proposition that you end with at the end. So this audio recording is going to alternate with some exercises. The first exercise is to analyze the overall arguments implicated in a previous student's research. And if you click on the link in Blackboard or in the online version of the syllabus, you'll bring up this previous student's research. The idea here is that if you can dissect, analyze, piece together, rearrange the arguments in someone else's research, then when you do your first draft, you could then do that to yourself to improve, clarify what you're going to communicate to others. Or you could do it for each other in buddy pairs in a friendly way. Okay, so let's go to this student's work. The file is called 692 Overall Argument Exercise or lowercase.pdf. I'll give you a moment to bring that up. And of course, you can pause the recording if you need a bit longer to find it. Okay, so imagine you've got it. It says, arguments behind my research on caffeine. And it's got 6 steps to it. So this was something the student was writing at around this stage of a course. And you can see some scribbles on it that I made, but you can ignore those. So the exercise right now is to try to analyze what this person's argument is, what they're saying. Imagine you had to distill it down to a number of sentences or a diagram, you know, what points lead to what. Okay, I think you should give yourself about 5 minutes to do this, and then we can reconvene. Okay, I'm back. Now, if we're in a classroom, I would ask some people to volunteer what they've seen. But I'm going to cut to the chase by doing it myself. The first section here, you see I've underlined addictive and a potentially dangerous substance. So the argument here is that addiction means something potentially dangerous. It is possible that there are some addictive things that are not dangerous, so we'll have to get back to that. But then they go on to section two, and this is not saying that you should, if it's addictive or you're concerned about it, you should stop taking caffeine. This is just about awareness, about educated decisions. Making personal preferences coming from each individual. Okay, I don't know how section one connects with section two, but we'll just keep those two sections in mind. 2 points. Third one, there's no reason to change our caffeine consumption because it's got some proven positive effects and it hasn't been proven to be addictive, meaning there's positive effects might outweigh the negative and there's some uncertainty. So I would call section three uncertainty means no need to act. We might say that's the argument being used against doing anything about climate change. What goes into our bodies, this is section four now, what goes into our bodies affects every part of our life. Caffeine can have a lot of effects, but now we're starting to see the effects are not the same from one person to the next, and it's difficult to predict them. So there's a new kind of uncertainty here. There's the uncertainty about individual to individual variation, and in the last sentence, varies within individuals from situation to situation. And you see my little comment, what argument does this make? So far we've got four different points. Now admittedly, the person put at the top arguments behind my research on caffeine. They haven't said, this is my overall argument. So we're going to try to put together these different pieces into an overall argument. Okay, so let's move to five. Awareness of the negative effects can help someone who thinks of it as a positive substance deal with negative effects they hadn't realized. And conversely. So at least there's some balanced knowledge. This would seem to me to be fairly similar to two, that you need to be aware and informed in making your decision. And again, so we come back to the choice to use should be an individual decision. So it seems like we've had this point before. But then we see, otherwise we're just accepting the uninformed decisions of previous generations based on contradictory information, some of which may be provided by companies with an obvious vested interest in the results. So here's a new one. We haven't seen this before. Vested interest in the results. So how would we put this all together? Well, I would say there are two parts. One is about the effects of caffeine, and the other is about individuals making choices. So I would say something like, caffeine affects one's body, and through this has effects on other aspects of our life. It might have negative effects, for example, addiction. It might have positive effects, and it might have not yet substantiated effects. The individual choice part would be that individuals should make personal decisions about caffeine consumption, but they should be informed better of negative effects, positive effects, and not yet substantiated effects. But that doesn't include this vested interest part. So how can we incorporate that? Well, let's click to the second page in this PDF. And you'll see the way I put it together in words. To make caffeine consumption subject to well-informed individual decisions, the author thinks that's a good thing to do, we need science that discloses its sponsors and produces individual and situation-specific knowledge. So here I'm including this thing about vested interests and also including this strand that I hadn't been pulling in the previous minute or so about individual and situation-specific effects. Without both of these differences among accounts of caffeine's effects, if you don't have knowledge of both of these differences, accounts of caffeine's effects generate confusion among consumers, and this tends to lead them not to change their habits. Confusion or uncertainty leads people not to change, not to really make an informed choice, but to just continue the way they've been doing. So that's what the person was saying in section 6. My investigation focuses, therefore, so now we're going from some overall points to what the investigation is about that this person might report on in their final work. My investigation focuses, therefore, on what currently obstructs full disclosure of sponsors and what steps have been or could be taken to produce individual and situation-specific knowledge of caffeine's effects. This student was a science student, so it's quite, you know, a biology student, it's quite reasonable that they would do point B at the bottom. What was the particular course was looking at the social impact of science, so the point A about what's obstructing full disclosure of sponsors was going to be some kind of investigation that they were going to do beyond simply what you do as a science student investigating biology and physiology and so on. So this paragraph, if we put aside the grammatical problem that I stumbled over, is an attempt to synthesize all these different arguments, the 1 to 6 on the previous page, into some overall premises and then the focus of the investigation. What this person needs to find out in order to address their concerns and build upon these premises. So this led me to invent a title that captured this. Toward well-informed decisions to consume caffeine, the need for disclosure of vested interests and for attention to variability in caffeine's effects. Now, you might not have distilled the argument in the same way, or you might have got stuck on some of the confusing pieces. You know, how do all these 6 points fit together? But if you can go backwards and forwards between the 6 points here and this overall synthesis, I hope you'll see that I've done a reasonable job in paying attention to the different things this student, this author, was mentioning, pulling it together so we can understand as a reader of the final report. That's if the student did follow this lead that I've outlined here. We could understand as readers why we're reading this, where the person's trying to take us, what evidence and new investigation they're drawing upon in order to support their points. And that's what I mean by overall argument. It's not the piece-by-piece argument that we were doing in Phase D that was trying to identify many different little points that we need to do more investigation on. It's the overall argument that we would structure a final report or an oral presentation around. So the goal now is that you turn the recording onto pause, and you try to do the same thing for yourself. It may require you to do what the student did and write down different bits of your argument and then synthesize it together. Or it may be that you're able to cut to the chase and produce a paragraph like the one on the second page that we've just been looking at for the last few minutes. It may be that you need to try this out with a fellow student to get clarity. It may be that you need to email the instructor to say, look, is this working? An instructor will know what your previous submissions are and will say, well, it looks good, but you're no longer mentioning A, B, and C that you mentioned when you were preparing your annotated bibliography. So I'm not saying that there's an automatic recipe for how to produce these, or that you'll be able to do it in one go on your own. It just depends on the way you think, the way you've been thinking, and using someone else's input, someone else's eyes, is always a valid part of the clarification you need to do in order to be able to communicate to others. In fact, clarification through communication is the overriding theme of phase G. Okay, so try it for yourself now, and then we'll go to the second part of this session 8, which will be using this kind of thinking to prepare visual aids. In this case, I'm not going to leave the recording on for half an hour or so while you analyze your own arguments, but my advice is to try it for yourself rather than simply just say, okay, I heard how Peter did it for this particular student. I'll do it for myself sometime. I'm saying try it now. It'll help you when we go on to the second section of this session. Okay, so this section of session 8 is about visual aids, but not visual aids just for visual aids' sake, but their use in aiding the clarification. And it will make a lot more sense if you've worked on the clarification of the overall structure of your argument or the progression underlying your research. The visual aids are visual aids for a work in progress presentation. In the next session, you'll practice those presentations, and in the session after, you'll present them. So in a way, we've got 3 or 2.5 sessions working on presentations of work in progress. So work in progress presentations are an important part of this course. They're not final presentations. We're not assuming that you've got everything ready at this point, which is just after halfway through the course. In fact, they're saying the opposite, that by working on these presentations, you will be able to move yourself along towards being able to write about them if you can clarify the overall progression of your argument by making, as you, in order to make these presentations, then you'll be better prepared, firstly, to do the writing you need to do by the end, but also to see what more research you need, what's most important. You might hear yourself, when you do the work in progress presentations, stumble over some points or have passion over some others that will give you some guidance about what ground is firm and what ground is shaky. And you might decide to go back and redo phase A. You may actually realize your main audience is different, or your main purpose isn't exactly what you've been saying it is. So that's part of the clarification through communication. And of course, you'll also get some feedback from the audience that will help you clarify. Okay, well, and in a way, it's also doing work in progress presentations is also a step towards phase J, which is about extending the impact of your work beyond simply a term paper that you give to an instructor. Why the emphasis on visual aids, though, not just the emphasis on doing a work in progress presentation? Well, visual aids, to me, I come from the era before PowerPoints. Visual aids were aids to your presentation. So no one ever tried to put on their visual aids, whether they're slides or overhead projector sheets, every word they were going to say. These days with PowerPoints, people do that. I have to say, I think they're visual, even though there's a lot of text, I guess we're supposed to look at them, but they're not aids, they're detriments to a talk. Whenever anyone has a mass of information on a slide, I never quite listen to what they actually say. If they read the whole thing verbatim, I read ahead of them, and then I get bored. If they don't read it verbatim, because I've read the text that they've shown me, I don't catch what they've said that's different. So for me, I come from the era of visual aids where you have some rules, like the ones that I present. If you click on phase G and then click on visual aids, rules like the writing should be half an inch high on the original sheet. Now, of course, what sense does that make if you don't do anything on a sheet? But if you imagine printing it out, you can tell what half an inch high is. Sorry, let me get the rules in front of me. They may seem old-fashioned, but they work. The idea here is that if they are just visual aids to your work, then what you're doing is trusting that you know the material well enough that when you see the visuals on the screen, you'll be able to talk to them. It will remind you of what you need to say, and you will be able to say it. Okay. Here's my first tip. Include only keywords or prompts to what you're going to say. So that's what I've been telling you about. 15 to 20 words or elements. If there's text. Text should be half an inch high or more, I've already said that. And I would say be very wary of bullets. Each of the points in a bullet may be relevant and interesting, but just put up as bullets, they often don't convey any logical connection. It's a little bit like the 6 points in the student's arguments that we saw before. It was really hard work to see how 1 connected to 2 connected to 3 and so on. And when people put up bullets, they often think they're relieved of the obligation for there to be any flow. But I would say if you can make your points flow one to the next so that someone the points that are on your visual aid, on your PowerPoint slide, flow one to the next, then you can explain that to someone. It actually leads you to the explanation. It aids you saying, this is the point I've got to make next. And then the audience holds it, takes it in and holds it. They can understand the overall picture about what you're trying to say, so that the details, if they're interested in, fit in. And if they're not interested in, they'll tune back in when you get to the important points. In other words, you're allowing for different kinds of audience or different kinds of attention. Maybe different kinds of attention because you haven't had your caffeine or not that morning or afternoon. So how do you go about preparing such a visual aid? Well, if a work in progress presentation is, if you have just 10 minutes, which is a typical thing in a for a course, and you spend a little bit of time getting up there and getting started, and a little bit of time at the end packing up, then you've probably only got 5 minutes to talk, and then a couple of minutes for questions and comments. So with 5 minutes to talk, you might say, there's not very much I can say, so I better make sure I have at least one slide that gives my overall argument. So at least if I can lead off with that, or maybe it can be the second slide if the first slide is your title. If I can lead off, or if I can have that such a slide that gives the overall thing, then even if I run out of time on some details, they've still got the overall picture. But it might also lead you to say, once I've given the overall picture, I don't need to walk them through all the steps in detail. I can actually just focus on the section where I need most feedback, where I haven't worked out my ideas the best. And that's the reason why we do work in progress presentations. If we did it as a final presentation and we got all this feedback about how you could do it differently, well, it's too late. And in practice, people don't do much with that end of semester feedback. So we do it when there's room, there's time still for you to improve. So it'd be nice to have an example of some overall arguments turned into visual aids. But we don't have one to use to refer to right now, clicked on the syllabus. So the one other tip that I haven't given you is one way to discipline yourself so you don't put too much text, is to take the standard 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and draw a line down the middle vertically and a line across the middle horizontally, and just work in one quadrant, one quarter. If you print, a normal person prints in that quarter sheet, you can't put too much on. So you can play around with, well, what would I put on my first substantive slide? And then what would I put on my second? And what would I put on my third? And it kind of makes you say, well, what's the overall argument? And then see whether you can make it flow. If I can do another student's work from memory, there's one student, in fact, it was a friend of the one who did the caffeine, who was very interested in the healing effects of the environment in hospital wards. There'd been some research on patients who looked out on plants healed more quickly from surgery than ones who didn't look out on plants. So I was looking out through windows, so it wasn't anything about whether the plants' carbon dioxide or oxygen production, helped them or anything like that. It was just the mental connection. So the student had that issue, and then they thought, well, what's a particular subsection of that? And she thought about the color of hospital rooms. We're probably all aware of the colors often being the light pastels, the light greens, and the light blues, and so on, or whites. And so you said, what can I find out about the effects of color on healing? So her first step was to say, well, let me look at how hospitals make decisions about the color. So she did that investigation, discovered that hospitals make decisions about those colors based on contracts with the paint makers, and these light pastel paints are for some reason not as expensive or available in bulk at inexpensive rates. So they weren't making the decisions based on healing properties. And in fact, as she looked, she discovered that there wasn't any substantial research, any research she could really point to about hospital colors and healing. So she realized that there needed to be some research. And she realized it was quite complex to design, to show the effects. And so her research project became to present a possible design for analyzing the effect of color in hospital rooms on patients' healing. So what she did in this first slide was summarize these steps in her story, from the initial interest in the overall effects of environment on healing to the sub-question of the hospital color, to investigation in the choice and finding that preliminary result, to saying, okay, so then I need to look at the research that tries to investigate it, and found there wasn't so much research, so therefore I need to design it. And then she focused our attention then on what kind of design would work. So you've got this slide which gives an overall progression. You can do, I took a couple of minutes to do it, but it's her work, so if she wanted to, she could do it quite quickly, and then say, now let's talk about the area that I'm still working on, namely how to design research that would see whether there's a connection. And so she didn't have to give us all the gory details she found out about the decision-making structures in hospitals about hospital colors. She could fast forward in her work in progress presentation to the area she wanted us as an audience to think about. So that was a verbal representation of what you would put in a visual aid. It would probably be a lot better if I had that visual aid in front of me. Perhaps I've made my point that you need visual aids and they can be very helpful. So your task now is to pause again, pause this recording, and try to draft your sequence of visual aids using that technique of dividing a sheet into four quadrants and not putting too much information in any one quadrant. Imagining that if you blew up that sheet, it would then be at least half an inch high in block printed text. At the end of doing all that, you should be, at the end of doing those visual aids and the earlier exercise trying to clarify the overall structure of your argument, you should be able to supply a working title for your presentation that we can then use in promoting these presentations so other people might come in and listen, not next week, but the week after. But that working title should convey what's distinctive about your project. You know, the cryptic titles that you have in books, you know, the titles that are kind of flashy for marketing, that's not what you really want here. You want a title that when a person reads it, they say, I know what this is about, and it interests me. You don't want them to say, I know what this is about because I've heard the buzz and the book reviews and so on. Books can do that. You can't. So you need to find a title for your presentation that conveys what's distinctive, and it might be quite long. You saw the title I had with the caffeine paper. And you should submit that title by email. And in fact, when this presentation, when this audio finishes in a moment, that'll be the end of the audio for today. So the rest of this session is really work that you're doing on your own. The follow-up says complete in-session exercises, which is what I mean by drafting your sequence of visual aids or going back and doing the exercise on your argument if you skipped ahead and listened to the rest of this audio. And then supplying a working title for your presentation to the instructor. Okay, so till next week. Bye then.